This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I talk to Jeff Dyer about his memoir, Homework. Readers of Jeff Dyer's books have come to expect his trademark humor and also his incisive cultural commentary. Now we have a book that is more fully focused on Jeff Dyer himself, his story, his childhood, his family and home, and what he experienced growing up English in the 1960s and 70s. We learn about the paths that led Dyer to his love of literature and his penchant for excelling in his examinations in school. So many wins lead to losses, too, as Dyer diverges from the life his mother, a dinner lady, and his father, a sheet metal worker, had always known. We learn about Dyer's tribulations of teenage sports, romances, fights, and other adventures. The memoir, Homework, takes us to the threshold of university, where Dyer even more acutely feels the distance from his humble beginnings. But his telling of this story brings us up close to share in his appreciation of his past. I spoke to Jeff Dyer about his new memoir, Homework. I'm actually from Laredo, Texas. That's on the border. And I was thinking about how resonant your book is for me. You know, they say, as you know, that the more specific the detail in nonfiction, the more universally appreciated it is. So
yeah.
I was having all kinds of resonances reading your book, I have to say. So I want to ask you first about the title. I love this title, Homework. It's so aptly named, this book, and I like the play on words that I perceive. But can you talk about this book? When people ask you, what's it about? What do you say?
Yeah. Well, thank you about the title. And I agree, there is the perfect title. And that makes me wonder why it was took me so long to come to it. Because initially I was going to call it, God, I can't remember what, something. And then I was going to call it A Happening. And then I thought maybe I'd call it A Happening, something like colon Homework. And then eventually I arrived at what was always, what should always have been the right title with those two meanings, as you rightly say. So, that's what it is. It's about, actually, maybe what I would have liked to have done, I'd like to have called it Homework, colon A Prelude, because it is, it's a bit like Wordsworth's The Prelude, you know, the prelude to what happened before I ended up becoming, you know, a proper writer and all of that.
Yeah.
The only other thing I'd say about that is that this is very definitely not volume one of a Nausgaard-like six-volume sequence. It will. This is all the autobiography there will ever be.
Oh, that's too bad, but I get it. Yeah. I mean, you're known for writing about so many diverse subjects, and now, yes, this is about Dyer, that Billy Collins blurb, Dyer on Dyer. Did you always know that you'd write a memoir? Was it just an inevitable thing?
Well, I think people, you know, you get to a certain age and you do. I didn't always think I would, but, you know, when I was in my, let's say, late teens, early 20s, when I'd become interested in reading and writing and I had nothing else to write about except my, you know, the life I'd led up to that point. So I wrote a few sort of scenes about family life and I kept those. And then, I had other stuff to write. And it was really from about maybe over the last 20 years, I thought I'd probably write something. And when my mum died, I agreed to write something for Granta magazine about her death. And but then it was actually just too painful to write about, so I didn't do that, although I had kept some notes. And then, enough time went by when I could write about, obviously I had to wait for my parents to be dead. There was no question of writing about it when they were still alive. And then the time seemed right. But the crucial thing I'd say about this is that, you know, there's nothing particularly interesting about my life. I mean, it's really, nothing much happens in the book, really, apart from standard stuff. But what is interesting, I think, and important, worth preserving, is the sort of social processes and the historical period that are at work and that are revealed. And to go back absolutely to what you absolutely correctly said, you know, the way to illuminate any general thing, a historical period, is by being very particular. So it's very obviously my story. And of course, I'm the person best placed on earth to write this story and didn't even need to research it because I'd lived it. But I think its value is because of something that it says about a particular period of English history, English society.
Well, you mentioned this idea about how this book also includes historical elements, and also you record a lot about the culture of that time. Something I appreciate a lot about this book has to do with all of the cultural references, the TV shows, some of which I'm not familiar with, some of which I really am familiar with, the movies, of course, the toys and the games and many other things from childhood. Some of the details are so specific. Had you kept diaries to record so many details, or is your memory just this good?
Mm-hmm. Well, I did keep those early attempts at writing. And not so much diaries, but I did have these manuscripts, which although they didn't have anything even close to any literary merit, it was a great reservoir of details. So I went through those and basically sort of circled all the details. And that meant two things, because, you can't have too much detail. So that was an invaluable kind of little archive, really. And then I found that with those details there, and of course I had memories as well, but then the act of writing, of focusing on this act of sort of recollection, that caused other things to emerge. But I'm not sure they would have emerged so clearly without those original manuscripts. I guess the other thing is that I have a tendency, I think, to do inventories, and it was important to do a thorough sort of inventory of all the stuff I had. But then the other thing that you need to do is to, as it were, narrativize, lend those details, all that information, a kind of narrative propulsion. And that I needed to do. I'm glad you said you liked all the toy stuff, because my American editor felt there was too much of that, and he was quite keen to move on to the sort of human relationships. But as I said, I mean, that piling up of detail at the beginning is serving a narrative purpose, because as an only child, of course, a lot of your relationships are just with your toys. And then since the main narrative propulsion of this is my transformation from being whatever I was into a reader. And in some ways, books come to occupy the same sort of function or place that the toys did when I was much younger.
Oh, so many things I want to ask you about now, based on what you just said. I have in my notes, ask Jeff Dyer about toys, bikes, books, and sugar. So we'll get to we'll definitely get to all of that. Well, you mentioned that you grew up as an only child. Do you think that's part of this, I don't know, the alchemy of your writing life? I don't know. Is there something there with only children?
Yeah, I'm convinced it is. I mean, so this book is about, I mean, the big theme is class, really, but the only child thing is such an important part of that. And I think in many ways, it sort of really does set you up nicely for the writing life, being an only child, because, you know, you're on your own a lot. And when you're a kid, you just have to find ways to occupy yourself. You're used to spending time on your own. And in every way, it seems the ideal sort of crucible, really. And also, I mean, I guess you have to sort of make things up. And also it's not exactly that you're lonely in any sort of Kafka-like way, but just this kind of, it's a way of filling up your world, really, isn't it, writing?
Yes, and I feel like an only child has a very particular kind of relationship with their parents. I want to ask you about your mother and father. Your parents in this book, for all we learn about them, and we learn a lot about them, they remain enigmatic to us. I mean, people are mysterious forever, I think, but there's this very interesting paradoxical thing that happens that the more you tell us about them and the more we know about them, the more enigmatic they remain. And that feels to me very real and true. I mean, I think I feel it about my own parents. But the book just really brings that up to the surface. Can you talk about your mother and your father?
Yeah, well, I think maybe what happened, you know, obviously you're very, very close to your parents as an only child, because you haven't got the you haven't got the other relationships with siblings, all this kind of stuff. And so there's something about that triangular, the intensity of that relationship, which means that, I mean, it's so intense when you're young that it would, in a way, it would be a bit weird if it went on when you were older. But also, I mean, this main thing that the book is about, this thing that happened that I was a passive beneficiary of, this educational escalator that I ended up riding. And at first, of course, we thought that's all it was. It was just me passing exams. And then much later in the day, we realized, I think we started to understand that there was more going on than that. And that more was always something that was difficult to express. And we all accepted really that big parts of what was going on in my life couldn't really be sort of expressed to my parents. There was plenty of stuff that we were able, there was plenty of sort of common ground, but a big part of it really was sort of inexpressible in a way that is certainly not the case for my wife, whose father was, well, he's retired, but he's a historian, and they sort of speak the same language. And there's just this process that I underwent meant that there was just a big part of my life that was so completely just outside of any kind of frame of reference that my parents had. And I guess the other thing is that, you know, when it was happening, I just thought that's what it is, you know, and we knew, you know, passing the 11 plus my parents liked, and that was a good, every working class parent hoped their kid would pass the 11 plus, and getting these A levels was nice. And then getting a place at Oxford was kind of incredible. Only much later, after I'd left Oxford, did I realize what this all meant beyond my individual experience of it, that actually what was really going on here, that part of what was going on was a thing of class, really. And I think that's what, I mean, the book is about class.
You wrote a book about endings, The Last Days of Roger Federer. And someone asked you in 2023 if you were then ready to write a book about beginnings. And you said, absolutely not. But you had completed one about beginnings. Reading that made me think about Edward Said's book about beginnings, called Beginnings.
Right.
He said it was, let me see my notes. He said, a crucial element of modern thought and the role of the intellectual. Beginning is not origin, and beginning is a humanly produced and intentional act of creation, and not something divinely ordained, for instance. He also said that beginning not only initiates new thought, but also sets boundaries on what is acceptable, influencing subsequent texts and interpretation. You know, I kept thinking, yes, we know all this. We know this. But I kept thinking about what he said about beginnings in thinking about your book. I don't know. There's just this idea about how beginnings are about imagination, he said, and action and invention, and this idea about sort of diverging from the path that you were on as this triad with your parents. I feel like there was within your early life that divergence. There was this other within that beginning. There's another beginning. Begin.
I guess I'm not sure. I mean, I'm really. It's so extraordinary to me that I hadn't even realized that that's what I'd done. I'd written a book about beginnings. And in a way, maybe this book is, as I was comparing it with the prelude earlier on, it's about sort of pre-beginnings. And I think in a way, maybe it's part of the interest of writing that it's only when you finished a book that you discover all sorts of things that it might ultimately be about, because when you're composing it, you're just concerned, well, mainly with the details and all of that kind of stuff. And it's that you're trying to get, rather than you know, some big theme. And I guess in that regard, maybe my particular way of working is important, because whereas most non-fiction books are commissioned, and you get the commission on the basis of a proposal where you might say, I'm going to tell my story and it's going to be about education and class in English life. I mean, I never do that. I don't write proposals because I don't know how to. And it's both boring to do the proposal because that's a selling document. And then having done the proposal, that would make the writing of the book boring. So in a sense, what this means is that I just write the book in order to discover what the book is going to be about. And I think maybe that kind of conceptual framing that Saeed articulates, that way of proceeding had no impact at all on my working on it. I'm just trying to see and render the scenes as precisely as I can.
I want listeners of this podcast to find this book and read all about your parents and all of the things that happened in your childhood and all of the things that elemented your childhood. And they'll be guided by these really perfect epigraphs that begin each of the sections. But I'm thinking about this process of writing about yourself that you're talking about and laying bare so much. I imagine it was also a process of encountering things you hadn't thought before. I mean, you spoke earlier about when you write about yourself, there's like this box of memories and you open that box and there's another box of memories and it just keeps going. You'll encounter things once you start, you'll jog something awake that then you have to reckon with and think about and write about. Because when we write nonfiction, most times we don't know what we will find or where we are headed, as you know. What's something you found that really surprised you that you had maybe forgotten about or put aside?
I guess the answer to that would be just the sheer wealth of memories that you, it's like if you imagine a very tangled bunch of wires in a tin or something, and you start pulling one, and it's just amazing how much sort of stuff you pull out. So just the wealth of memories that were there that I hadn't thought about, and I certainly hadn't sort of suppressed them in some sort of trauma way, because there was absolutely no trauma, no incidents really in my childhood. But how easy it was to for them to emerge, and how it wasn't any kind of therapy or anything like that that was doing it. And I wasn't, I'm certainly not interested in the idea of writing as therapy, but just in terms of trying to substantiate scenes and, just trying to do that really, how any given memory also brought with it a load of other ones that were attached to it. And really, how could that not be the case, since, the life you're living isn't made up of isolated moments. They're all tangled up together.
So are your genre-busting days over? Everything I read about you is, oh, he's a genre destroyer.
Yeah.
Not this time, maybe not this time.
No, several things about that. One, the genre-defying stuff. I was never it was never like I was some sort of Johnny Rotten punk saying, I'm going to, turn over all the genres and smash it up. It was just that was the kind of thing that the way of writing that came that suited me and that I was suited to. The other thing is that, genre defying hybrid work. Well, there's so much of that about now. It's almost as though the software for doing that is available for free download. But what I would say is that actually this, I started off thinking this would be a much more formally unusual book in that it was conceived as a map. And I don't know if you're familiar with these Ordnance Survey maps that we have in Britain, whereby, they can be either covering a county or a larger thing, but you have symbols on them to show the post office or pubs or something like that, or schools. And I thought I'd use these symbols of pubs, let's say, and I have slightly different symbols, like, to indicate where fights took place or where some sort of romantic thing took place. And so I was going to arrange it, if you like, according to space rather than time. And then gradually I had to reluctantly accept that this was causing way more problems in terms of the arrangement than it was solving. So I ended up defaulting to or arriving at via a process of experimentation. I ended up at the most traditional, tried and tested thing of all, i.e. the memoir that unfolds just chronologically over time.
I think it works so beautifully. I have to tell you, as I was reading, if I had to put it down and go do something else, I would think, oh, I get to go back and pick up where I left off and continue on this seriously and continue on this journey. The resonances are, there's something about it of mood or texture or something. I don't know. It's quite magical. And I have to tell you, too, the images in the book, the photos in the book, your Naunton Park Junior's class picture where it says, I'm in there somewhere. And I said, oh, how could he do that to us and not tell us where he is? And then I focus in on a little face and I say, that must be Jeff Dyer. And then I look at the boy next to him and I say, oh, man, maybe that's Jeff Dyer.
Ah, there we go. Yeah.
I couldn't quite figure it out, yeah. But it's such a beautiful photo.
I guess that's important as well for this larger thing I was saying, you know, that, you know, in a way, I mean, to make a ludicrous point, it's not about me, this book, or rather the me in this book doesn't matter. So I quite like the way that this book could be by any of the kids in that picture. Any of the kids who were lucky enough to, you know, to pass the 11 plus. But just to go back again to what you were saying about how the sort of detail of it, I mean, I'm really grateful that you said that. And of course, you know, to flip things around, here am I in England, you're in Texas. I mean, I was on your end of things, of course, when I read Mary Carr's The Liars Club.
Yeah.
I had the same experience you did, identifying very, very closely with a life that, by definition, I couldn't possibly have lived.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing, too, about this is the world that you create. So you mentioned this could be a book by any of those kids in that photo, for instance. But there is this world that you create around your family, around your neighbors, around the kids that you played with. It's just a wonderful world to enter into. So, Jeff Dyer, thank you so much for talking to me today. I feel so honored and so thrilled to get to talk to you. I've been in the audience listening to you before, but thank you for talking with me today.
Oh, great. Thank you. And the pleasure has been mine every bit as much.
Jeff Dyer is the author of the memoir, Homework. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Write to us at bookpublic@tpr.org. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.